The conversation that you're about to hear took place on April 15th, 2020, between eminent lawyer Veronica Panay-Gube and myself, Abhijit Naskar, a neuroscientist. Enjoy the conversation.
For now, like, the most critical thing is, like, having your private, like, health records out there. So this is one of the things that for COVID-19, that's something that's very critical. Like, of course, we know that it's a global pandemic, but there are some people that would not be comfortable to let other people know that they've had it because, you know, there's a stigmatization. So if I positive and I'm put under quarantine till I get better and then I'm released back into society, but then people know that, oh, I had COVID-19 and I start getting segregated. So even after the whole event is over and everything is calm in the world, when I go out, I would still get a stigma. People would still stigmatize, like, you know, even if you cough, everyone's like, oh my God. And people would still, like, try to distance themselves from you. So because of that, if someone personally does the posting themselves, like informing people that they've had COVID-19, then that's fine. But if they haven't, there still lies that under our laws, you have patient confidentiality. So authorities are not authorized to release your health records. And at first, I saw, like, a lot of people, a lot of countries made that mistake, you know, to release names of people. But at that, their families were stigmatized. You could see instances where they're like, oh, that house had someone with COVID-19. So don't even go close to the house, even after the person has been taken to the isolation center. So the thin line that although we track people to be able to ensure that they do not spread the disease, there's a thin line between it, because you also have to ensure that you respect the rights of privacy, which is embedded in the constitution of most countries.
I think we should make one thing clear, really. The very term privacy is a myth. It doesn't exist, you know.
We understand that. I understand that there's a school of thought which says that privacy, it's relative.
There comes the point, actually. It's not actually a school of thought. I mean, when you say school of thought, it basically implies a kind of just an opinion or just a bunch of beliefs. But you, for example, you cannot deny that you have a heart that pumps blood throughout your body, which makes you live, right? And you cannot deny that all your information, all your characteristics are dependent on the information of your genes. No, on your genes. On your genetics, right? So those are the biology. Yeah. That's the biological part. Now, when it comes to technological part, there is again reasoning there. There is again facts there that basically show us any device that is connected to the internet, there is no such thing as privacy in such a device. Internet and privacy do not go together. They cannot go together.
Because that's why you hear... So that's why you hear things like, do not put your bed dates online. Do not put private issues online. So if you put your bed dates online with your month, it's easy for a hacker to hack into your account. Those private details that
exactly,
they would ask you, like,
point.
At your bank, putting your date of birth.
It all depends on the individual intention. For example, let's think of a politician, okay, who is in control of those cyber data. Let's think of a politician. Now, that politician would naturally present himself or herself to be the most ideal person on earth, right? I mean, he or she would talk about, oh, I'm all for privacy and I'm all for human rights and all that. But nobody has any clue what that person is doing on his computer behind closed doors. He has access to all the information. He has access to all the information. So he can, if that person chooses, just for fun or just for showing off to friends or just for any other reason, regardless of the reason, that person can still open those files and look at data if they want to. It all depends on the individual. Policies do not work behind closed doors. There is no such thing because we are not machines. You can program a machine to do certain things and do not do certain things, but you cannot make a person, an organic creature, to not do certain things. Anybody can do anything because we are organic. So if a person...
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Yes, continue.
I get what you're saying, but then you still need laws to be able to guide. So in the fact that if we do not have laws that guide against cybercrime, that's against privacy, the world would be in chaos.
Yes, I agree. But
the world would be in chaos. But regardless, so when someone goes behind closed doors to now breach those laws, then they can be held accountable. So that's why we have laws. So when it's seen that someone...
If that person is found to be guilty, So I'm not saying that there is no use of law. Of course there is use of law. Of course there are policies for that. But the point is, what kind of society is this? Now, I'm very much aware that this is not a black and white region. There is no distinct area. These are gray areas, and we are talking
very,
about
very
it.
Gray areas.
Exactly. That is the whole point. I mean, we cannot simply say that, okay, today I passed this law. Now on, every single problem that this law is supposed to address is going to disappear on Earth. Exactly. That's a kind of fantasy. It's never going to happen. It doesn't happen like that. I mean, people, for example...
Same time, laws.
Yes, continue.
Sorry. At the same time, laws, that's why we have laws, and that's why we are able to amend and vary our laws. So the first place that a law would set to address a situation that is placed. So if there's something lacking, the law comes in, it steps in. But then as it steps in, things change. And with technology, the change is constant. So as the change is constant and our laws take time to keep up, policy comes in to say, these are the new gray areas and this is what we should address. So when the laws are about to pass, you evaluate all the things that the policy gaps have addressed, and it's included in the laws. And I think that's what happens. Policies and laws grow together. So I think there's no place where you would say, like you said earlier, that a law would come in and easily address it, because technology changes. So where there's this technology at this moment, and you pass a law now that addresses the situation, before a few months, there's a new tech that has come in that you would see that would breach some of the laws that you've put in place. And I think that's where policies come in, to ignore the laws that are there, or we say that the laws are not working. I think the most essential part is that you have these laws. That's the first step. I think that's a landmark. And these laws are put in place to be able to address some certain issues. Of course, for cybercrime is changing every day. I think the number of hacks that have happened, especially during this COVID-19 period, has just gone from here to here. You see meeting rooms being hacked. Zoom has had, I don't know how many hacks, and they've been trying to, you know, ensure that they put security in place to ensure that, you know, the cyber crimes are going like shoo because of this period. And I think that the world wasn't prepared for a pandemic like this. Even if people were putting things in place, it just came like unexpected.
The point is
and
that
it has changed a lot. Okay. Listen.
Yes, the point is that, yes, you said that law is there to bridge the gap and policies are there to do the same. But the point is that you cannot fix a society's problems with laws without the responsibility of the people, the citizens. I mean, think about this. What kind of a world we live in where you can make people stay inside home only by passing a law that says it is illegal for you to go outside? I mean, what kind of world are we living in? I mean, if a scientist or a doctor comes in front of you and tells you with their all of their medical expertise, do not go out, people will die. You yourself may die, or you may cause other people's death. They do not listen. They do not listen to these experts, these health experts, medical experts. Suddenly, some politicians, some government issues a law, go out and you will be arrested. Go out and you will have to pay this fine, this huge amount of fine. So unless they're like made to be, they're made afraid of something, they're not going to listen. I mean, what kind of world is this? So it looks like it is actually not the law of a civilized world, it's the law of the jungle we are talking about here. I mean, we are using the law as a kind of stick to control the tigers, like the way they do in the circus, right? Yes,
but then I understand where you're coming from. But then also let's look at it from the perspective of ensuring that lives are protected and live people are saved. So the government's first reaction is to ensure that a government's first priority is ensuring security of lives and property. That's the first. Every government is to ensure that they provide for their citizens and they ensure that they provide for the security of their citizens. Drastic measures like passing laws that against the right to go out. But then we're looking at an emergency situation that has come in, and the governments are trying to see how they can curb the spread. So you see governments passing emergency laws. These are emergency laws and these are trying times. So it's not like they are passing it without a cause. So it's for security of lives and property. I understand that they are coming out at a bad time. But the thing is that you can see that with every step they take, and they see that there are some gaps, like when they... a state in Nigeria recently decided to relax for the Easter season. So they decided to reduce the restrictions and allow people to go for their religious gatherings. So after they passed that, they noticed that there was a lot of talk and a lot of conversation around that, and a lot of people were saying, although we are religious, although we understand that it's a season where we need to pray and we need to pray as a group, but these are trying times and COVID isn't going to take a holiday or take a break. It isn't. So if you relax the laws for people to go out, people are going to get infected and people are going to be affected. And they came around and changed it and restricted people from going out. So even the lockdown laws, the first time they passed the laws, it says, okay, everything is locked down. But when they saw that people needed to go to shopping, people needed to go to the market, then again, they took a step and said, you know what? You can go out to shop 3 days a week in a certain time. Ensure that you keep your distance. Ensure that you keep your, you wear your mask, you keep yourself safe. Ensure that for a household, only one person goes out to do their essential shopping. Again, when they did the lockdown orders, they ensure that health and essential workers can go out. I understand that these are trying times and we do not understand, but I think that credit needs to be given because even the government doesn't know what to do. They are just trying to see what they could do to, you know, they've not pre-planned or said, okay, when we have a pandemic or an epidemic, what can we do? A lot of governments haven't been faced with this, especially at in this age of digital media and everything that's going on. And I understand that, you know, people want to go out. I understand that people feel that their fundamental human rights are being trampled on, like my right to movement. I have a right to go out anywhere. But then let's just move back and think.
What is human rights? Does a person have rights?
Human rights are basically rights that are entitled to everybody.
Okay, what is it?
Right to life, right to education, right to freedom of movement, right to be heard. Those rights that are fundamental to you as a human being. Right to movement. I have this right to go out. Someone cannot restrict my movement. If someone restricts my movement, then they are invading my movement, which is fundamental.
Exactly.
I know. Exactly. But these are trying times and it's a time of emergencies. So even in our laws, you have the freedom of information. You have the freedom of speech. You have the freedom of expression. But then it's simple. It's this way. Where my rights end, the rights of someone else's begins.
So there's always... I mean, can it ever be like that, where your rights end, somebody else's right begins? Or is it like it's always either you can maintain your rights and somebody else's rights are going to be compromised because of your rights? Think about this. If you are entitled to your opinion, if anybody is entitled to their opinion, right to freedom or freedom of speech, the so-called freedom of speech. If somebody is entitled to freedom of speech, which means they can say anything they want and they can express anything they want publicly, regardless of consequences, which means...
No, they can't.
No.
You can't.
Why?
Because where your right starts, where your right ends, another person's begins. So even if you have the right to say whatever you want to say, you have the right to hold opinions, you have the freedom of speech, at the same time, you can't say things that will affect someone else. The simple man says this, you can't go into a cinema and shout fire, 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 because you know that there's going to be a stampede. People's lives are going to be put in danger.
How are we going to stop that?
How are we going to stop that? Ensure, that's why you have laws. So like even in the Nigerian constitution, you have the provision for, let me use the freedom of expression. So you have the freedom of expression. There are certain rights anyway. But then you have, even in those sections, they said even in those situations where it would affect the public health, public morality, public safety, and security. If your rights are going to impede on people's security, people's health, if you're going to put people in danger, then you have crossed the line. Because there's always a line. Just because,
who determines the line?
Public morality. I know that's the tricky part. Who defines what public morality is? Whose tests are we using? I think that's where the debate comes in. Because is it the government's test, or is it the citizen's test? Who is it going to be more favorable to?
Exactly.
Who is it going to be favorable to? But then the basic understanding of it is, I have the right to drive my car. But does that mean I have the right to drive and hit someone on the street because they are crossing as I drive?
And so what happens if you do?
Then you'll be held accountable for your actions.
What happens? You are held accountable, except you come from a powerful family. You come from a place of authority. You come from a place of heritage.
Nobody is supposed to be above the law.
Is it, or is it just an idea that we have inside our head that makes us feel comfortable?
But
is it really the case?
It really is the case in some situations. I know that in some situations, I know we've seen cases where, but the essence of it is that nobody is above the law, regardless of your position, regardless of your stand. Yes. Nobody should be above the law. And I think
That is the principle. That is the principle. So
that's the principle. That's the essence. Nobody should be above the law. And truly, nobody should actually be above the law. I think people should be held accountable for their actions, whether you're in a place of authority or not. Because seeing that nobody is held accountable for their actions, then that's where chaos comes in. Because people would feel, I'm not going to be held responsible.
Let's do a thought experiment here. Let's assume that in a future scenario, you become an eminent lawyer with unlimited power, with unlimited control. I said hypothetical situation. Unlimited power. Control of tons of law enforcement officials and all of that. And your son or your girl, you buy them a car and they run somebody over. At this point, you may think, I will do this, I will do that, based on our morality at this moment. But what will you really do at that point? I mean, if at one side you have your principles, another side you have your family, your maternal instincts.
I think that it all boils down to the person and who you are. I think if you understand, I think it boils down to the person. And everybody will react differently if they are put in those type of situations. Because, like you said, motherly instincts will kick in. I need to preserve my children. I need to save my children. But if I'm in a place where, if I do not respect the law, I'm a lawyer, I'm supposed to uphold the law. If I don't do that, and if my child doesn't face the consequences for their action, then they can do it again. Because if I'm supposed to ensure that my child goes to driving school, I'm supposed to ensure that they learn the ground rules of the law, obviously, as citizens. They're supposed to uphold the law. They ensure that they get their driver's license. They ensure that they go to school and they are able to drive properly on the road. I know that with these things, it depends, the dynamics change when you're driving on the road. But if an instance where my child is held responsible for hitting someone, the first thing that my child should even do when he hits someone is to ensure that you take that person to the hospital. So you're not going to just hit and run. You're going to ensure that, you know. So you're going to look at all these things play. But at the same time, it comes down to the individual. I can't blame the law for my kid. Because if you do that, there are people watching you. The people around you would no longer respect you because you, as a person who is seen to have higher standards, haven't had higher standards because of your kid. If I allow my kid to do something wrong and get away with it, then my child will know that because my mother is in an influential position, my child can get away with whatever they've gotten away with. And this goes down to upbringing too. It goes back to how I brought up my child. Have I brought up my child in the way that they are held accountable? So, and then you lose your integrity. You lose your standing. You can't go into court and start saying, oh, and try to ensure that you charge other people when you can't even charge your own son. So it will be me giving up. Of course, it will be something hard. It's called tough love. It's going to be tough love, a tough love situation. But if I'm put in that situation, I will choose the hard one. So my child growing up with me, we already know from the day one that mommy would pick the law over, depending on the situation, the soft landing they will get. But I get what you're saying, but I think it boils down to the individual, how you were brought up, the moral standards that you have, the integrity that you have, because people can snap depending on the situation. People can change depending on how they are put. So even as I speak, my integrity level can change depending on my mood. So if I'm in a place where I'm a single mother, this is my only child, circumstances can change. I may think differently if I have an only child and I'm a single mother. So my reaction will actually depend on the situation there. But at this moment, my situation will be to ensure that my child is held accountable.
See, that is the whole point. Above the policies, above the laws, above the government, above the constitution, there is a higher principle, and that is the principle of individual integrity. Without that integrity, no matter how much policies you create, no matter how much laws and enforcement officials you create, you're not going to build a nation or build a globe or build even ensure health and safety and sanity in society. I mean, all of those things come later. We have to first, like you said, so this the only way to prevent the situation that we were discussing about is to raise the child in a way that they would have the sense of integrity, sense of law and order from the very beginning. so that they know what to do in such situations. So that is the only way to prevent. That is the only way to prevent. And other than that, laws and policies come later. We have to ensure that every single person in the society have that sense of integrity. I mean, every time government feels threatened, government comes into a crisis, and they just rush to passing these kind of emergency laws. I mean, where does this sense of emergency go in other situations, in other humanitarian crises? I mean, something like this has happened, like it has never happened in such a grand scale. And now it happened. Mm-hmm. Now every single government is working together and taking almost similar actions, except in every other scenario, they're always fighting with each other. They're always talking down each other, and they're always insulting each other, because that's their only purpose, as if that's their only purpose. So where does the integrity of the government even go in other situations? So if we could just ensure that every single individual, regardless of whether that is a lawyer, a scientist, a politician, a civil servant, if every individual has that sense of integrity themselves, and they do that same for their own kids, then that very day we will no longer need any kind of laws and policies.
But do you think that you would never need laws and policies? I mean, human beings will always be human beings. So regardless of how you bring up a kid, like if you have a family of six, regardless of how you bring up a kid, there would always be one that would resist the law. There will always be one that is, there's always going to be someone in society that's not going to play by the book. So how do you handle that? So that's where law comes in. Law comes in to ensure that everybody's put, understand.
So what you're saying is law comes to deal with the bad child of the family, the bad seed of the family, not the good seed.
It comes to give everybody. It comes to give everybody because I'm just giving that as an example, because it's not everybody that is going to break the law. With or without the laws. With or without the laws put in place. It's not everybody that would.
Is it such a case ever? I mean, is there any single person who has never broken a law, no matter how little?
And yeah, I know, like they'll break different laws. No, but really, the law is made for everybody, so nobody is above the law. So regardless of whether you are the rule breaker or not, the law is just to ensure that we have order. People do not encroach on the rights of others. Because I have the right of movement. But if my right of movement is going to affect someone, I'm going to pass COVID to the other person. I'm going to transmit it. Because I'm not going to be, you know, they say if you know you're having symptoms, stay at home. Self-isolate. Self-isolation wasn't working. Because they say if you come back from visiting another country, ensure that you stay at home 14 days, you quarantine yourself, you observe yourself. If you see that, you know, you're feeling some certain kind of symptoms, contact the CDC, contact the NCDC in the case of Nigeria, contact the authorities. You will see people that just came back and they are moving around. They are touching things. They are not sure. They haven't isolated themselves to ensure. So this was just, you know what? As citizens, ensure you keep people safe. If you come back, stay home. It wasn't a law. People were just advised to stay home. But people were not staying home. People were putting other people's lives in danger. So if government did not take the steps of saying people should stay home, the numbers of people dying would be more. This is a situation of life and death.
So what does it say about that?
So you're in this situation, you're not only putting other people's lives in, you're putting your life in danger. So this is not even about others. It's about you and everyone. You're putting your family in danger. So if I come back, I'm supposed to isolate for 14 days. If I go out, I'm putting my immediate family in danger. I'm putting my friends and family in danger. I'm putting whoever I meet in danger because I go out, I touch surfaces, I cough everywhere. Unconsciously, you're endangering people. So I think that it's essential now, where we should raise eyebrows is in a situation where there's no epidemic or where the pandemic is over and people are still put in lockdown. That's where the concern should be. Why are you putting people in lockdown when it's been solved, it's been over? That's where it should come in. But for this situation, I understand that people feel they can't move. Of course, it's tough, it's different. That is something that I'm not used to, too. But people are trying to adapt. I understand where it comes from. Because it's even against the Constitution. Nobody should impede your right to movement, your right to association. So you're free to go out wherever you want to go to. But these are trying times.
And is there is there any such thing as a constant Constitution that doesn't change?
No, obviously the Constitution changes all the time.
So assume that we cross 100 years.
So I think that what
100 years. So we cross 200 years, then we have changed a Constitution that we have today so much. We have amended so many policies and so many laws. So now we have a Constitution, a radically different one, which means that the Constitution that we have today is already outdated.
It is.
Yes, so what is the Constitution? I mean, it's not even constant, right?
It can be constant because it needs to change. Change is the only thing that's constant. So your Constitution can't be constant because society changes with time. It changes over time. Certain norms that were not acceptable before are now acceptable now. So our constitution needs to change to adapt to the new change.
So why do we...
We can't change our constitution and say we're restricting movement. No, we can't. This restriction is only for... It's only a law for a certain period. And after this period passes, that law would be null and void because it's not essential at that time. So what is changing isn't our constitution at the moment. It's just the laws to ensure that we secure lives and property. Sorry, lives.
So why have we created this glorious idea called constitution?
So the constitution is just basically norms, our values. So our norms, our values over time. It's just the composition of that all. So the laws where you are is different from the laws where the constitution where you are is different from the constitution where I am. Right?
So we need a book to tell us what does it mean to have human rights. What's the meaning of human rights? We need a book to tell us what's the meaning of equality. We need a book to tell us what's the meaning of justice.
So we have norms and values, and norms and values are generally what we are brought up with, the norms, the customs in my situation. So it's, what is the custom of the people of Nigeria? What are the norms and the values of the people of Nigeria in my instance? So we decide, you know what? We all, but let's put it in a book. Let's pass it as out, because the constitution is the ground norm. And any law that comes into the country that is inconsistent with our norms, which is our constitution, will be void. So these are our norms and our values as a country. So this is our constitution. This is what holds us. This is what we live by. And any other law that comes in and is inconsistent with our norms and our values would be void. But over time, our culture, our value changes. So once it changes, we adjust our constitution. Of course, nobody needs law. Nobody needs to tell you justice. Nobody needs to tell you your human rights. But at the same time, it's just a system where we need to ensure that everybody is on one page. Everybody knows that these are our values. These are our customs. So what will be in my constitution will differ from place to place. I'll give you an example. So in Nigeria, we're not an Islamic state. So you wouldn't see Islamic laws reflect in our constitution. But if you go to other countries that are Islamic countries or Islamic states, you would see the reflection of Islam in their constitution, because those are the values that they hold in their society, in their country. But at the same time, you would have laws or norms and values that resonates with everyone, like human rights. Like right to movement, right to life. There are norms that would, those, it resonates with every country. So every country would have some basics in their, so this is change over time. So when we were living in the Stone Age, they didn't have constitutions per se, but they had norms and values that they were governed by. So the only difference is we have put down ours in written form.
No, you see,
and there was just oral.
The problem is, for most people, it is exactly oral. It is exactly theoretical. For most people, humanity has become obsessed with learning about justice, learning about equality, learning about human rights and humanitarianism from books. They don't know. They don't feel what it means every time they're pushed outside of their comfort zone. They seek security from constitution because this is our last savior. They see of it as a savior. They don't see it as a book of codes or something. They don't feel the codes, and that is the whole problem of
because they feel that they're not brought into it. Okay, so I get what you're saying. So is it that they feel that they were not consulted, or they were not, their opinions were not heard during the making of the constitution? Is that what they feel?
No, perhaps.
Or do they feel that it doesn't express what they represent in a way, or the values they hold?
It only matters if you are in the majority. Depends on whether you are in the majority or minority. I mean, first of all, you don't feel. Most people don't have feelings of their own. They are made to feel. They are made to have ideas. They are made to have notions. You have a Netflix show, and suddenly that Netflix show is shown across the world, and suddenly your ideas naturally get seen into all the people that are watching your show. So your ideas become their ideas. Your ideas become their feelings. So what happened to their own feelings? What happened to their own ideas? So which means that in most cases, people don't have their own ideas, or they are never taught to have their own ideas. They are taught, this is what you're supposed to be thinking. This is what you're supposed to be feeling. And this is what justice looks like. This is what equality looks like.
But again, if you think about it, like every human being has a gauge. So within you, you know what is good or bad. Respectively told what to do. You're not be disrespectful to your mom. No one needs to tell you that. It just comes. Those are your own ideas. You know, I'm supposed to respect my mom.
Yes,
I'm supposed to respect my dad.
Yes, when it's your own family. But what happens to the neighbor? I mean, when it comes to your own family,
so when you go,
you have this feeling.
Well, if you know someone is older than you, you're supposed to give to respect. I don't think it's something that the law tells you, or you have to respect people. It's just embedded in. However you're brought up would reflect who you are, the ideas you hold. your perspective about life, what you see life as. If I'm brought up in a situation where I'm allowed to slap anyone I want to slap, I've grown up in that society. I've grown up in the community where whichever I want to slap, I'm allowed to break whichever laws I want to break. I don't have a certain time to go sleep. I stay up at night. I drink alcohol as a kid. When I move from my society to a different society, then I notice that it's not so. The way people were brought up, the society that you're in affects you. And I think that's what sociologists say. The agents of socialization are the parents. The second agent of socialization, society, education, when you go to school, the values you're putting at school. So if we want to change the mentality of the younger ones, if we want to ensure that everybody's patriotic, and if we want to ensure that everybody has a system of accountability, integrity, it falls back to ensuring that at that level of socialization, children are made aware of the essence of integrity, the essence of accountability, the essence of patriotism, the essence of leadership, the values of life. I think that would go a long way to ensuring that society, so even if in a situation of a pandemic and you as a citizen is told to, it would ensure that you hold you in order to ensure that the lives of you don't put lives in danger. You can't do away with laws and policies. That's just the truth. It's a fact. You can't do away with laws and policies. Because if you do not have laws to hold people accountable, people would not act in line.
But are we holding people accountable or are we holding animals accountable? I mean, if people are humans in the first place, they're accountable themselves. They don't need laws to hold them accountable. So if there is a law to hold them accountable, which means that they are not humans in the first place.
I get where you're coming from. But laws are essential to ensure that everybody is aware, to ensure that there is order.